Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a remarkable woman who reinvented herself in a most innovative and unique way. Following her retirement from a 30-year career as a paralegal, technical writer, and training specialist at a major law firm. After attending one of Oprah Winfrey's public speaking engagements, she decided to become a volunteer in prisons, where for the past decade, she has worked with countless male and female inmates to develop their self-esteem, anger management, problem-solving skills, positive thinking, and a variety of life skills and coping mechanisms to help them in the rehabilitative process. Her unique combination of interpersonal skills, compassion, common sense, and a huge heart made her an immensely popular and sought-after personality within the jail system, and she was even awarded Volunteer of the Year at one of Canada's largest women's prisons. Her experiences in the jails and the many insights she learned not only about the correctional system, but from the prisoners she worked with, are the subject of her fascinating book entitled The Prison Lady: True Stories and Life Lessons from Both Sides of the Bars. This is an entertaining, moving, and inspirational book full of empathy and profound perceptions about an almost totally neglected and forgotten segment of society. Her book resonated with me on multiple levels, not only because of my 26-year career as a family and criminal court judge, but because this woman has articulated so beautifully the key to what it means to live a meaningful and purposeful life. In addition to her work in prisons and as a writer, she's a certified life coach, mediator, and motivational speaker. But in my opinion, she's much, much more than that. She's a healer. I'm delighted to welcome Phyllis Taylor to our show. Phyllis, thank you so much for being here.
Harvey, I think you can only imagine how excited I am to be with you today. You almost brought me to tears. So thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Well, your book almost brought me to tears. You know, I want to take you back to that event where you saw Oprah Winfrey. What was it that triggered your decision to become a volunteer in the jail system?
It was watching the women who had been Skyped in from a penitentiary in Indiana. And those particular women, there were six of them on the back wall and hanging above and around Oprah. And as I listened to Bishop T.D. Jakes on the stage delivering his presentation on gratitude, which I knew something about, but not everything about, of course, and the benefits thereof, I watched the women intently. And as I was watching them, I saw light bulbs going off. And in that moment, and in those moments, as they were emoting and learning and having an awakening, so too was I.
Now, you had a difficult childhood with a very abusive father. You wrote that the abuse you suffered as a child instilled in you a desperate need to connect with others and to help them, especially the underdogs, the marginalized, and the disenfranchised. Tell me about that need inside you to help people.
So it's difficult to identify exactly where that comes from or how it manifested. But what I can say is that from a very early age, I realized that parents were dangerous and friends were fabulous. And along with my friendships, there would always be that person in need, the person who needed a conversation, a helping hand, some advice, if you will. Even from a very young age, I was giving advice. Call it innate, call it natural, call it genetic. But as I grew older and in different positions I would hold professionally, not the least of which was my profession in the law firm as a teacher, people would always find me to be a safe place. So they would close the door, come in and have that chat that they wouldn't necessarily have with human resources and other resources within the firm. So I found myself having great empathy. I'm not sure I can identify exactly where it came from, but I can say that as a child, I was severely beaten. I was what's known as the scapegoat child, which is the one who got it all. Whereas my brother said he could run faster, and that's why he was never harmed. My mother was never harmed. She was rendered inoperable, more or less, because she was full of migraines and tears and medication. But I was also, when I got caught sneaking out the bedroom window, I was also locked in my bedroom for a year. So that wasn't fun either. But I also wonder if perhaps that incarceration for that year might have given me more and deeper insight as well.
As I mentioned in my introduction, you teach courses like anger management and problem-solving skills, and you do a lot of counseling with the inmates. And obviously, you found a way to really get through to them and to give them some self-insight so they can hopefully make better choices when they get out of jail. What do you think it is about you, Phyllis, that enables you to have such a positive impact on these men and women?
It's simple. It's kindness and respect and hope. I believe that when I speak with anyone, especially people in struggle, and I seem to attract them, I believe that when I treat all people with kindness, I get it back. When I treat people with respect, they learn respect. And when I give them hope, they have hope. And so I feel that when I speak to the men and women in incarceration and I give them a little bit of hope, it makes them think, wow, maybe this woman is making sense. Maybe she has something to offer. Maybe I can learn something from her. When I give them respect, they mirror it. And when I give them kindness, it is oodles and oodles of kindness that is returned to me. Always and with very few exceptions.
Do you talk to the prisoners about the pain you've experienced in your own life to get them to open up about their lives?
The answer is yes, absolutely. And outside the prison too, I find that when we allow ourselves to share, when we allow ourselves to become vulnerable, when we work with authenticity and truth, and we let people in, they will let us in. And the only way that I can help others is by finding a hook, finding a connection, finding something that's happened to me or someone close to me that I can relate to them and go, I understand what you're saying. And then I am able to listen because they are able to trust.
I love that, Phyllis. You know, as a judge, I used to do that. I would say to people, you know, I was on welfare too for 5 years when my parents kicked me out. And I know what it's like to be poor. And somehow it made me feel a bit more accessible. And it made them feel that maybe I had something encouraging to say.
Harvey, we're talking about humanizing ourselves. Because people would see you as a judge, Your Honor, as someone above. And therefore, perhaps intimidating or unapproachable. Almost unreal, perhaps, if you will. Well, I'm seen the same way from time to time. I'm not comparing my status at all, but what I am saying is that coming into a prison, a gal who's got, you know, hair and makeup on and a couple of, I tried to dress down, but I'm a little bit of a big character, as you can probably already tell. And so I wanted not to be that person, but it is who I am. So I had to find other ways to have them relate to me, to understand, and to know how much I cared. And I did manage to show them that.
Oh, for sure. It's clear. And I can tell you that I know that not just from your book, but from my own research at several jails. You are a legend. I hope you know that.
I don't know that exactly, but I would like to do my own research and find out too.
Now, I'm sure a lot of our viewers are wondering, Phyllis, whether you've ever felt unsafe when you were in a jail.
The shocking answer to that is no, never. I feel more unsafe in the local mall having coffee with the ladies around a table in a food court. I've been approached by actually one of my prisoners in a food court, which is a fun story, not included in the book. But in the prison, I felt Why would I not be safe if I'm loved? I felt safe, always.
Now, obviously, you've dealt with prisoners who've committed very serious offenses, including violent crimes like sexual assault, robbery, home invasions, even homicide. How do you bring yourself to not judge them and to show compassion and kindness to them?
It's an interesting question. I believe that as thinking, alive individuals who have brains and who do process, that we do form judgments, but we want to put that on the back burner. Of course, when I see somebody who's a rapist, I'm thinking, oh my God, is this, you know, where do I fit into your life and how can I help you? And I also go like, how much do I want to help you? But the answer is easy. It doesn't really matter. My job is not to judge them. My job is to help them across the board. And in all but one situation, that's what I did. And so how do I find myself not judging them? In honesty and in fairness, I put it to the back of my mind, but I do have feelings and opinions and such like the rest of us.
Well, I don't know if this resonates with you, but when I was in the courtroom, my way of trying not to be judgmental was to try to understand the trauma that they had suffered that underlied their behavior. You know what I mean?
Wholeheartedly. You know, that is exactly what I say when people ask me in more in depth about how did I get over it? It isn't do I judge or not, but how do I get beyond the judgment? And it's exactly what you're saying. And of course it resonates with me because I believe that we are all 2 degrees of separation. That being the mother and father and the home that we were brought up in. And despite my humble and harsh beginning, I still was taught right from wrong. I still had food on the table. I mean, I've dealt with prisoners who were put out on the porch. I've dealt with prisoners who were brought up in a biker home. I mean, how can they be like you and I when they weren't given what you and I were given?
Exactly. In explaining your role at the jails and your work with the prisoners, you said that you're not there to address their crimes. You're there to assist them to heal whatever it was that caused them to break the law. That's a very significant distinction, isn't it, Phyllis?
Yes. I mean, I'm not there to help them stop robbing banks. It's much deeper than that. I'm not going to give them a lesson on how not to rob a bank. What I'm there to teach them is critical problem solving. That includes money matters, gratitude, forgiveness. I mean, most of these people, like most of us, have been wronged in their lives on one level or another, at one time or another. And how do we get beyond it? We get beyond it by forgiving those who have worked against us. In addition, and where it pertains to prisoners, it's very critically important that they learn to forgive themselves.
Now, Phyllis, as you can imagine, there were a lot of things in your book that really jumped out at me because they reinforced my own perceptions as a judge. For example, you said that young pretty boys, as you called them, are at great risk from the other inmates. You wrote about a young man named Jason who was raped by his cellmate. I was particularly touched by that story because that was one of the biggest reasons why I did everything I could not to send young men to jail. And if I had to, I gave them the shortest possible prison sentence. And my other concern about sending young men to jail was that they would find the wrong kind of friends and role models in jail, which is so counterproductive to rehabilitation, don't you think?
Absolutely. And speaking to your point and question about the pretty boys, listen, I don't have statistics. I don't know that the prettier a man is, the more susceptible he is to being victimized. I don't know that. But what I do know is that a couple of the men who have spoken to me, and can you imagine men, young men, older men speaking to me about having been raped? I mean, it was all I could do to stay composed and not blink and not let them even know that there was emotion flooding through me. But what I did note and again, it cannot necessarily be accurate, is that the younger they were, the more attractive they were, the more susceptible they appeared to be or seemed to be in stories that I heard about having been victimized sexually.
So do you agree with me that putting young, dysfunctional men in an environment with a bunch of other dysfunctional men is not going to be conducive to rehabilitation because they're making the wrong friends and having the wrong role models?
That's absolutely correct. I think we could agree that we need to keep our society safe. I think we could agree that punishment needs to occur, lessons, rehabilitation needs to occur. But putting them into a prison that is overcrowded, where there are more than two men in a cell, and that means sometimes some are sleeping on the floor or makeshift cots. I'm not sure exactly the dynamics thereof, but there's got to be a better way, a way that not only protects us, but additionally protects them.
Well, now, as you know only too well, the vast majority of convicted criminals suffer from mental health challenges, poverty, substance abuse, addictions, and sometimes PTSD from the abuse they suffered as children, which you've referred to. From what you've seen, do you think the correctional system is equipped to effectively address those issues?
Not equipped, ill-equipped. And therefore, we are not doing enough to bring in counseling, to bring in social workers, to rehabilitate them. Often, when you talk about substance abuse, PTSD, mental illness, physical disabilities, I've seen prisoners crawl in on a walker or if they have a cane or whatever, very little is being done to help them, to bring them up to a normative or a standard.
Okay, you're pushing a lot of buttons here. I'm going to tell you something. One of the reasons I left the judiciary after 26 years on the bench is because I believe the criminal justice system is a disaster. And almost everyone I know who works in the system shares that opinion. It's the elephant in the room in every conversation that judges have with each other. And so I was very happy to read your comments, Phyllis, about how the correctional system fails to deal with the underlying problems that cause people to commit antisocial behavior. So let me ask you this. What, in your opinion, would constitute a good, effective prison that maximizes the chances of rehabilitation?
Obviously, everything has to do with funding. But let's just say I can dream. You're asking, I'm dreaming. So I would see each prisoner come into the establishment and have an in-depth interview to assess where they are mentally, physically, emotionally, financially even. And post-assessment, then we could put together a plan for going forward. I'm not saying that each one has to have an individualized lesson or classroom, but certainly we can find like people who have similarities and in their needs, in their training, in what they could be given. Just take problem solving. Some of them have no idea how to solve a problem, from the very most fundamental problem up to and including how to pay the rent. So if they could be given classes similar to the stuff I've taught, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, I've often thought that that's exactly what is required. It seems to me that a lot more social work input in prisons would be very helpful in connecting, making a connection with a prisoner to make their time there more conducive yes. to positivity when they get out.
And I would add to your point that transitioning back into society is critical because, as you know, I've been a very bad girl. And I have stayed in touch with a couple of prisoners post-work, post once they graduated, when gone off campus. So I have stayed in touch with not many. I have to concern myself with my own safety, but with a few. And I have noticed that those who have familial support, so it could be a mom, it could be a brother, it could be a partner, or it could be a dear friend who really cares and knows how to be there. But those who have familial support and coupled with financial support do better. It's obvious. How else could that happen?
Yeah, for sure. Tell me about the prison guards and correctional officers you interacted with. Do you feel they do a good job of managing the inmates in a fair and respectful way?
They're like people. Some do, some don't, and it varies. So I can tell you more generally that I have worked in both general population and protective custody. So I'm going to address them separately. In the general population, for the most part, I felt that the prisoners were more or less in front of me dealt with fairly, maybe not beautifully. They could do better. They could be more respectful, perhaps even kinder, if I might use that word, in a prison, but not so bad. But when I went into protective custody, I had a challenge. I had a challenge with, I was working in protective custody with women, and they would only allow me, I think it was 10, I can't remember if it was 10 or 12, women who were guilty of things such as statutory rape. There was a teacher in there. There was a gal who had accidentally, by her account, drowned her child in a bath when the whole family was, I mean, it was just heartbreaking. And the guards did not want me, as a volunteer, did not want me to come in and work with them. And they made that very clear. Statements to me such as nasty to me, and statements such as, why would you bother with these pigs? Why would you waste your time? Why would you work with these women? You can't teach them anything. You're not going to change them. They're not going to appreciate it. And you're not doing any good over here. What does that tell us?
Yeah.
It was horrendous. I had to fight my way through to the protective custody unit just to get past the nasty guards who were keeping watch of everyone, especially me. Beautifully, though, we were put in a fishbowl and they couldn't hear us, so we carried on.
What's your opinion of the use of solitary confinement in a jail?
If you want to damage someone's psyche, if you want to turn a person from an active mind into a vegetable, that's the way to go. Any of us feel if we were put in a small room, similar to the cells that we've seen on TV and movies, put into a small room, and our food was, listen, I was in solitary confinement for a year myself, with exception, but in my own home. But when you have, we are built and on this planet to interact with others. It is an innate need that all of us have. And so when you put someone in a room and you leave them to their own recognizance to speak only with themselves and in their own minds, it's damaging. It's further damaging. They're not going to come out better. They're going to come out damaged.
Boy, is that true. You wrote that when a long-term prisoner is released from jail, they have very few supports and they're basically forced to return to a life of crime. What kind of supports would you like to see?
Well, we do have the Elizabeth Fry Society. We do have the John Howard Society and other societies globally whose job is, whose mandate is to transition people back into society. I have worked with those societies. In my opinion, they too could do better. I'm not criticizing them. I'm sure they're doing what they can with what they have. And we're speaking about funding. But if they were given appropriate funding, and if they had professionals or people like myself who would come in, and it can be volunteers, because it is such a heartwarming thing to be able to do this. I would lead up an entire army of people as such. But if they had the funding to bring on some professionals who could even train the volunteers or guide them, oh, I think that would go a long way. Because these people are like sponges. They are thirsty, hungry, and anxious to get someone in their life who can teach them, because they've had no one in their life who has.
I can't resist asking you, Phyllis, do you watch those prison shows like Wentworth and Oz and Orange is the New Black?
Does a pregnant woman want to give birth? Of course I do. Of course I do. I watch from a child, I was watching Perry Mason. I'm dating myself, but I was watching Perry Mason, and now I've got Law and Order on tape and sexual victim unit and everything I can get, because I learn from those things. And not only that, I'm interested in it, but I do learn. I always learn. And I have learning as a continuum until death do us part.
Well, are those prison shows, are any of them realistic?
So here's what I think about that. Let's just take Orange is the New Black as an example. And I watched everything that I could, every single segment. I believe that all of those things are realistic, but for Red, the girl in the kitchen, and I'll return to that. But all of those shows are realistic, with some exception. And the things that go on that show do go on in a prison, except not all in one day. You may have an event that happens weekly that would be big and alarming and newsworthy, but they put it all into one day, and I get that for story, but they do not have the prisoners making the food, because I think a few more prisoners would become ill with stomach ailments, etc. And they also don't have them like a whole cot that looks like a dormitory or series of cots where they're jumping from bed to bed to have story and share and have fun and have sex. It just doesn't, it's a lot tighter than that.
That's what I figured. You wrote that you see your role in prison as fixing the broken pieces. Are you ever able to find out whether you succeeded and actually helped an inmate to turn their life around?
Oh, I love the question. I hate the question. So here's the thing. I don't get and am not privy to statistics, obviously, as a volunteer, but I have clear markers of people in front of me where I witness the light bulbs going off. I also witness a change in behavior. There are many chapters in my book that deal with individuals who, just as an example, there was a young boy who came to me and said, I'm a narcissist. And we worked through the entire thing until he became no longer a narcissist. And it was an aunt who had labeled him as such. And his story is magnificent. His ending is fantastic. And I see that happen. I have seen it happen. In addition, the inmates that I've stayed in touch with that I mentioned to you, having been privileged enough to feel secure enough to share my email address with them. And in one case, meeting a gentleman for life coaching on my way home from prison on a weekly basis. But I see the difference in his life. And one other gal who I'm in touch with on Facebook, who has an extraordinarily beautiful ending to her story. I won't share that here, but it is intriguing and it's shocking and it's wonderful. And it makes me cry every time I read my own book.
You know, you're touching on to this very special quality about you. You're a bit of a rebel. You're a rule breaker. You know, you have maintained a few friendships with prisoners after they were released, even though it is strictly prohibited. How do you get away with it?
I have a little bit of risk-taking in my blood from a very early age. I mean, you must recall me sneaking out the bedroom window, hitchhiking down to the district and dancing in the window of Boris's discotheque. So being a very bad girl. Nothing's changed, Harvey. I'm still a very bad girl, but in a very good way. And I feel that if I have enough heart and soul and brain, and I'm cobbling them together and using them for the greater good, I'm going to do what I feel without hurting anyone or breaking any laws, but taking a risk that I'm going to have my hand slapped. I mean, I'm telling you right here that I'm and I know you have a viewership, that I am in touch with a couple of prisoners. Oh, well, but in all cases, it's because I want to follow their path. I want to give them more of Phyllis, and I want to do the best I can for society. Call me Pisher.
Well, I want to ask you now about the effect on you personally of your interaction with the inmates. You wrote something that really touched me deeply, Phyllis. You said, and I'm quoting you here, "A meaningful life is mandatory in the pursuit of happiness. When you shine a light on others, they often shine one back. Those who have experienced the most pain are often the best teachers." So, Phyllis, my question to you is this: what's the most important thing the prisoners have taught you?
Prisoners have taught me to love. The prisoners have taught me to open my soul, to open my life, to share freely, honestly, authentically, and with genuine passion and compassion. And they have also taught me about second chances. They have taught me that everyone deserves a second chance. I worked with a serial rapist. He deserved a second chance, all outlined as to why I came to that conclusion, obviously. And I've also learned that the way to health and happiness and longevity, I believe, is finding your passion and living it. That's what I believe. And I believe that with all my heart.
Do you think that by working with prison inmates, you were able to begin addressing the emotional scars that you suffered as a child?
Every single one of them. Because I've had friends that have said to me, oh, you never talked about being abused or beaten. No, I didn't. I had taken all of that and pushed it way, way to the back of my mind, never thought about it, never dealt with it, kept leading my life, kept trying to exceed my expectations, and always striving to be the best I could be in my career and in my world at large. But it was when I was listening to prisoners that bells were going off in my head and reminding me of the abuse I suffered. And then I started to think about it. It was through the prisoners and through my interaction with them that I was able to help them to relate and to begin to heal myself.
You wrote that working with prisoners was a humbling way of developing and deepening your own character. What did you mean by that?
Okay, I'm taking a deep breath. So I feel, and that I assess my own personality and character and dealings with people was different pre-prison. I'll tell you how. I was working in a major international law firm, and as such, I was running lessons and classes for lawyers and support staff. I defined myself by this position, but it also gave me what I can only call an ego. And I was always a big character, but I think I was also somewhat intimidating. And that intimidation was probably felt outside the classroom as well, in my interactions with everyone, possibly even including my own children. I'm not 100% sure. But as I began to realize who I was, what I was, and that I too was flawed, that I could do better, that I could be better, that I could learn from my own lessons, it changed me. It just made me kinder. There is no other way of saying it. And people who have known me forever noticed it. They noticed it.
Well, I haven't known you forever, but I can tell you I'm in love with you. I was in love with you before I met you because of that fabulous book. And for me, there's three themes that run through your book: forgiveness, kindness, and gratitude. Do you agree? Those are like the big takeaways.
Absolutely, the big takeaways. If I can also add on passion, hope, and respect. I mean, let's just get it all. These things are so critically important to our own well-being, not necessarily always with a view to helping others, but even with ourselves and helping ourselves to live our best life. Exactly what you've pinpointed, Harvey.
I understand you've been approached by a filmmaker about possibly turning the book into a movie. What can you tell us about that?
I'm excited. Yes. So, similar to you, a filmmaker has seen a couple of my interviews on TV and was fascinated with my story. So purchased my book, read my book, loved my message, loves my story, and we are moving forward. I have signed a movie rights contract now, and we're in touch. We're having 4 and 5 hour meetings regularly, and I couldn't be more excited, because if I can get my message out there, and I want to meet Oprah Winfrey, and this might be my path.
Well, in a way, you kind of are the Oprah to the prisoners.
I'm exactly that. That's so kind of you to say, because I've often thought of it. When I walk into prison, you can feel the excitement. You can see the excitement, and you can hear the excitement. When you come from a humble beginning, you just realize that there's more to life to have and more to life to give.
Well, if someone who's watching this interview decides that they might like to become a volunteer in a prison, what advice would you have for them?
Do it. I'm currently mentoring a gentleman who I'm not sure how he connected with me, but I'm going to guess through Facebook, and wrote me a private message and wanted to know, had also read my book and wanted to know more about volunteerism and how he might fit in. So I started to speak with him about it. And we found that he's an artist, and he decided he was going to follow. And I gave him a connection and who to speak to. He decided to follow in my footsteps and go in and do art with the prisoners. And I have heard that he is one of the favored volunteers, and I couldn't be prouder of Joel.
Well, the thing about you that I sense, having worked with prisoners in a very different capacity, mind you, in the courtroom, but the thing that I see in you that, in my opinion, would really resonate with the prisoners is that you're maternal. A lot of these prisoners were not mothered, and you provide this mothering. Do you feel that?
That has crossed my mind. I don't want to be seen as an old lady, despite the fact that I have children and grandchildren. I'm fighting it. But yes, I do think that there's certainly a component to my mothering. But you know what, Harvey? I can mother someone younger than me or older than me, because you've nailed it. I just need to treat everyone as if they need a mother. I guess that's as good a word as any.
Well, I guess another word would be nurturer. You nurture people who never were nurtured in their lives.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Some of them have either never had a mother, had an abusive mother, had a delinquent or absent mother. I try. I do the best I can with what I have.
Well, Phyllis, I have only one more question for you. When I read about some of the challenges in your life, your abusive father, your difficult marriages, and some of the challenges you've faced in your career at the law firm, the word that came to mind was resilience. Where do you get that resilience from?
Well, if I know, I think I was born that way. I have been just a young girl who determined that if it was difficult at home, I'm going out of the home. If I needed money, I'm going to sneak out the window and hitchhike down, and I'm going to go dance in the window and make enough money for lipstick. Nothing has changed. I don't know where resiliency comes from. I would have to study it. I would have to figure out where all of that comes from. But I have a drive. I just don't understand why.
I think you found a very healthy way to harness and channel your pain into something very positive. That's my armchair psychologist analysis.
It sounds good to me, Harvey. It sounds really good to me. I have always been very excited by career. I'm not domestic, which is interesting. I am nurturing. I am a mother and a grandmother, but I am not a domestic. You will not catch me in the kitchen. You will not catch me gourmet cooking and all that kind of stuff. I'm not domestic. But when it comes to work and career, since the day I got out of school and graduated, I loved my work. All of my work, all of the time, to including now having written the book, speaking with you, the prospect of this movie, I embrace all of it. And I look forward to the next chapter, literally and figuratively.
Well, you're not nourishing people's stomachs, but you're certainly nourishing their souls. And I can't wait for that movie to come out. And I hope you'll come back to promote it when it's out.
With invitation and by invitation, it would be my honor and an absolute pleasure.
Well, I have to tell you, Phyllis, it's been a real pleasure having you on our show. Your book should be required reading for every judge, criminal lawyer, social worker, probation and parole officer, and everyone who works in the jails. I really mean that. Thank you so much for writing the book and for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thank you, Harvey. I appreciate every word, every question, and every opportunity you've given me today. Thank you so much.
Our guest has been Phyllis Taylor, whose book entitled The Prison Lady is now available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Deborah Batsafin, my PR director, Laurie Towers, and my entire team at the XPTV1 network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.